tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Hannah Lenz. Hannah is the executive director of SPARK, Supporting People and Animal Relationships for Change, an organization focused on changing narratives in animal care and well-being so that our stories and messages help us do the best possible work for animals and people. Hannah has spent two decades in animal welfare, including at sanctuaries and animal shelters such as the Washington Humane Society, now Humane Rescue Alliance, MSPCA Farm Sanctuary, and Sasha Farm Animal Sanctuary, as the Global Program Officer for Companion Animals at the International Fund for Animal Welfare. Hannah helped create and facilitate community-based dog and cat population management programs in communities worldwide, including projects in Mexico, Bosnia, and Chile. Before SPARK, Hannah was a co-founder and leader of Impact by Design, a nonprofit consulting firm that supports animal welfare and conservation organizations. Hannah is a passionate advocate for the well-being of animals and people, a messaging strategist, a human-centered facilitator trainer, a national speaker, and an avid cat lover. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Stacey.
So let's talk about that cat lover. How did you become so passionate about cats?
So I definitely grew up in a cat-loving household. I remember my parents even talking about the cats they had before we were born and how they taught them how to, like, fetch little foil balls. I feel like I popped out an animal lover, and I was very fortunate to be in a family and environment that cultivated that. And even at a very young age, I was volunteering with my friend. I think we were in like first or second grade. And this was, you know, in the 80s, 90s. So you could just drop kids off places. And my parents would drop us off at this place called Animal Fair, which was in like a little strip mall, and they had kind of a pet store in the front, but they did animal adoptions in the back, and they would drop us off on the weekends and we would clean cages. I remember they'd give us like the big bags of laundry and a bag of coins, and we'd wheel all the laundry down to the local laundromat and do their laundry. I got to foster lots of kittens growing up. We had litters in our house, so it's always been a part of my life. And now I have cat Steven, who also is a very big part of my life and my family.
So as you grew up, I mean, how did you learn about community cats and their issues, or are there issues in your mind for community cats?
So I grew up in central Ohio on the edges of farmland. We had cats in our neighborhood. And so there was always this curiosity about them. I think very quickly, as I became more involved in the sector, you know, in animal rescue and animal sheltering, was through the organizations I was interacting with. I feel like I've been aware of Alley Cat Allies for a very long time. I was always really interested in what's going on with animals. How can I best help? You see an animal in distress and trying to get involved. So it's hard to pinpoint almost an exact specific time, because I think of all the organizations I've been part of along the way, and growing up in more suburban rural area, working at some farm sanctuaries and that kind of environment, the barn cats, community cats you see in a more rural area, and then working at a very urban sort of low resource animal control facility here in DC, you see other kinds of community cat realities. So I've just been exposed to a lot of different experiences.
It seems like in your professional journey, you went pretty fast from that hands-on front lines to more of a strategic thought. Am I correct in understanding that?
Yeah, I think it was maybe a decade of really doing hands-on work. I was mucking barns. I did animal adoptions. I did behavior work. And especially when I was working at the animal control facility in DC, was just really starting to feel like, oh, there's big work to be done in the sector. I would love to be part of that. And that's what drove me to go back to school and just continue on the path that I've been on.
So before we talk about SPARK and what it is and what it's all about, You've been involved with a lot of organizations. You've also acted as a consultant. What's the type of work that you did when you were consulting with organizations for cats specifically?
I had a chance to work with a variety of shelters and animal welfare organizations, from planning, strategic planning. What are we, you know, these organizations exploring, what are we going to do to have the biggest impact for animals in our communities? Of course, that involves cats and community cats. And then also organizations would often come to us and say, hey, we have this big idea for something we want to do, which is sort of how Spark was born, actually, the baby Spark. It's a big, complicated, gnarly problem. Can you help make this a reality? And that's where I really like to dive in. I'm like, ooh, it's messy and it doesn't exist yet. Like, we can figure this out. Let's get it and figure it out. So my work has, I was really fortunate. Impact by Design worked with a lot of different organizations, and my niche was often in the animal sheltering, animal welfare space, because it's a lot of where my passion and experience was.
So going from there to Spark. So tell me, how old is Spark? What is Spark? How'd you get started? And what does it mean for us who are out there caring for community cats or doing rescue or working in adoption programs?
Yeah. So Spark has existed as Spark for about a year, but I would say Spark was born a couple years ago. So there was a group of folks who worked at animal shelters, rescues, national and state organizations, and we'd actually worked on another project together. And they said, you know what? There's a big problem with messaging in our sector. Something is really going on. They were seeing that messaging was causing a lot of divisiveness. It was really impacting how we were thinking about marginalized communities. It was impacting potential for fundraising. A lot of organizations were saying, we want to try these new transformative programs. We want to do something different. But we feel like we're really stuck in old ways of thinking. Can we get our funders to come along and do work in a kind of different way? What does it look like to support people and animals together? And there are a lot of divisive issues. Community cats came up, right, as an issue that can cause a lot of division and really strong feelings. A no kill came up as an issue, caused a lot of division and really strong feelings. And so there was just this feeling that the messages that are mainstream, the way we tell stories, the kinds of stories we tell, are feeding a lot of these problems, the shaming and blaming of people and organizations, the inability to work together, you know, to really find ways to collaborate. When we share so much, like, this love for animals is really at the core of a lot of what we share, but we're kind of stuck up in disagreeing about different ideas and ways of doing things. So it just was feeling like this is a big piece of the puzzle. Messaging and stories, it's not going to fix everything, but it is a piece of the puzzle that is essential and needs work, because we know how much the kinds of messages and stories we hear impacts what we believe, like, to be true, what we think is really happening. And so it just felt really essential to dedicate resources and efforts into what does it look like to transform our stories and messages so we can do the best work for animals. Because right now it feels like in some ways we've been a little stuck. And so we actually, about a year ago, started presenting some ideas. We have three main principles, and we started sharing these principles, and people were so, the response was so enthusiastic. We didn't actually think this was going to be an organization, but there was so much, are there more resources? Can I get training? How do I start doing this in my organization? How can we talk this way? And that's why we exist, because people said, we really want this. We really need this. And so here we are, doing our best to support people in this sector in the way they need support. And we see that messaging and stories is a big piece of that.
So when you use the word sector, I guess then we're talking more about animal welfare organizations rather than being out in the community talking about animal welfare to anybody on the street.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question, because even at the beginning of Spark, we had a big conversation about this. Who are we talking to? Who are we talking about? And obviously, we think a lot about words. And so we thought a lot about these words. And so we use the term animal care and well-being sector, but we think about it as a very big umbrella. So, of course, it encompasses animal control, animal shelters, rescue groups, but also veterinarians, people who work in the veterinary industry, spay and neuter clinics, but also really importantly, people in communities who are doing work day to day for animals, people who are managing colonies, people who are a neighbor helping a neighbor. There's so many amazing people in our communities who are just supporting and helping with the animals that are happening in their communities that are not necessarily part of an organization. And we're all together in this. And so when we think about the impact that Spark has, but who Spark is for, it is for this much bigger collective, we, who are thinking about the well-being of animals and making sure that they're getting care in some shape or form.
There was a session I sat in on that you led, and you had done some survey work, and it was about the ideas of what the general public thinks about animal shelters. So you were out collecting information externally and bringing it sort of into the organizational space. And what you were just saying was more of from the internal going out. And when I teach various classes on trap, neuter, return, our TNR certification workshops, even the higher level course that I run at the University of the Pacific at Barnard College for Community Cats Program Management, we stress significantly about language out in the field that people really understand. So if I have to say, I'm going to get these cats fixed, it's okay, because that at least is language that's understood at the immediate moment. It's the beginning of a relationship. And maybe down the line, we can talk about what does TNR mean. But we don't want to isolate people initially by using jargon or language that folks have no idea what you're talking about. And then they're going to be scared of you, and they're going to not invite you on the property and allow you to put up shelters or trap on the property and that kind of thing. So I feel like there is a water flow east and west. We have to be the Pisces of people here, which is going back and forth with our words and trying to understand or actively listen to what's the language that your audience is most comfortable with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's I think sometimes it's really unintentional, right? Because we get used to talking about certain issues in certain ways. And when you have a certain amount of information, right? Like if you're really in this world, you get exposed to things. And so those are the way you have conversations. But it's so important to think about who the audience is and where they're coming from. Because if we're trying to be good communicators, the most important thing is how people are receiving and hearing that information, what they need to receive and hear. And that is where we need to begin thinking about what our messaging is. There's two things we talk a lot about in Spark that I think really relate to this. And one is empathic listening. And I feel like people hear listening or empathic listening, they're like, yeah, I listen. I get it. I said, I hear things. And we do spend a lot of time hearing things, but empathic listening is really, it's taking it up a notch. It's a different level. It is saying, what is the way that we can practice our listening so that we're really getting to a deeper understanding of where someone is? And so that the way we respond to them is also telling them, we get what you're saying. We really hear you in a deeper way. That is the foundation of trust, and trust we know being the foundation of relationships. And that is how we actually start to make some of the amazing work that we can do happen, right? Like you were saying, people can be really put off or fearful of with certain language, or you don't know the experiences they may have had before. And so if we start from that place of just like listening and trust and relationships, that's what's really creating opportunities for us to do work for cats, especially out in the community.
I think it's really interesting to understand also, you talked about sort of our sheltering organizations, our animal control, our private practice veterinary clinics, our local, we have all these different constituents. We think we should all be close together, but we're all pretty far apart, I think, in a lot of ways. And I keep trying to learn more and more about each sector to try and understand what is that mosaic of animal care in the community, including individuals, and what's their perspective on animals so that we can understand what are their sort of animal welfare or their cat welfare glasses seeing that we're not seeing on the other side to be able to understand things. And I know there's been a lot of stress between the rescue world as well as the more physical shelters with regards to returning friendly cats outside. That's been a hot topic. With the lack of access to vet care for nonprofit organizations of all types, and then in the private practices too, there's pressure. There's a lot of spay-neuter pressure out there. And in some ways, I feel like the communication's been really tough to explain why is there the pushback in the community. If there's a friendly cat, don't bring the friendly cat in, leave the cat there if it looks healthy or well cared for. And is that the right messaging for the community? If that cat's not spayed or neutered, is that the right thing to do? So there's, as you say, nothing's ever simple. We wish it would be, but nothing is ever simple. But trying to understand where we fall in that communication basket. I mean, what would you do? Would you just throw everybody in the room together, virtual Zoom room, or into a sandbox? If you've got a target area, a regional area that you really want to work together so that you can be impactful, how should we initiate some base level of conversation?
Yeah. I have had experiences where we've thrown everybody in the room before, and some of them go well, but it takes very careful planning of exactly how those conversations are going to go. So I don't suggest it. I really think that it starts with connecting with people and relationships. But I'll say, I think we have a really big barrier to that because of some of our mindsets and ideas about people and organizations. There's often a lot of villainizing, and there's a lot of what we call othering, which is, oh, that's a them thing. I'm different. Like me or my group of people, we're different. We believe something different. We are so fundamentally different. And those kinds of beliefs and ideas are so pervasive in our communities at the state level, then at the national level. And so these are the right, like that is the beginning of trying to get to the next place where we can start working together, where there's relationships. And one of the things we think about and talk about a lot is when we've gotten into all this othering and the villainizing, we're kind of up here in the realm of opinions and ideas, and we tie who we are and what we care about a lot to like what we think the solution is, what we think the strategy is, whether it's returning cats or not returning cats or spay and neuter. But we are missing like how at this fundamental level, if you're in this space, if you're having these conversations, it's actually because you care about the same thing, which is cats or what's going on in your community, the health and well-being of animals. I mean, there is a lot of common ground, but it's getting totally lost in the fact that we don't see that in each other. And so when we think about messaging and storytelling, so much of that division is actually coming from the way we have messaged and told stories about each other, about people in our communities, about different organizations. And so when someone is feeling like they're being portrayed as a villain, when someone feels like they are being stereotyped, right? They're just being characterized as one thing, or because they look a certain way or they did a certain thing, then they're all bad, right? Like, nobody likes to be stereotyped. Everybody knows what that experience is like. It feels crappy. But it happens all the time in our messaging. I think people who work on cat issues probably know that experience very well, because people get stereotyped and then may be brushed off or not get a seat at the table, right? Because they're characterized as crazy cat person or a feral cat person, right? So we know what this feels like. And I think sometimes we are forgetting that actually in our own messaging and stories, we're doing that to other people as well. And that is putting up all these blocks and divisions. So in our day-to-day, we have opportunities to tell messages and stories differently, which is, this is about us. This is about our community. We're in this together, right? There is a we. And I think that starts by building relationships and just starting to talk with people one-on-one, getting to that place where you can bring people together. But there is, I know it would be so great if there was like a silver bullet or like the magic that we could sprinkle on these situations. But I think it's not magic, but it is like a very real opportunity in our day to day, how we talk to people and how we talk about people. And I promise it makes a really big difference when you start engaging with people in a different way. You see how it makes a difference.
Well, and I'd also challenge and say with organizations, other organizations, social service organizations within the communities too, we've talked a lot about external programs or moving outside the shelter walls and moving out. And I have a vision where our cats and dogs are really just incorporated into our social service programmatic community, which makes animal sheltering, again, vulnerable to having social service programs basically handling a lot of the things that they might have had programs for and being adaptable to that type of change. And I know that conversation happened before we entered into the vet shortage. Are we going to spay neuter our way out of needing our adoption programs, which has not happened? But it was a conversation that was happened in Massachusetts and New England at a point in time. So with that all being said, I think that our organizations need to think to be willing to have more of a collaborative effort with the nonprofits with that are within the community space, because I do think that there are a lot of risks of like, we're going in and we're going to do this, but then we might go out and not do this anymore. And I think growing sustainability within like local churches, food banks, social services makes a lot of sense. And then you can move on to the next community once there's a sustainable support in there.
Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trickum on Highway 92 at Trickum Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if your whole TNR team was on the same page? Imagine your staff and volunteers mastering trapping best practices, prepping cats properly for clinic arrival, and making everyone's job easier. Would you like to give them a toolbox of tips and tricks to refer to whenever trapping gets tough? Our monthly virtual TNR workshops are perfect for group training, covering everything from TNR philosophy to planning, equipment use, public relations, because we are all going to run into those stubborn neighbors, and cat care tips, plus more. With Q&A sessions, handouts, customized content for your program, your team will be ready to successfully reduce the number of free-roaming cats in your community. Ready to turn your trappers into a team? Great! Email Stacy at communitycatspodcast.com or call 978-239-2090 for details.
Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now.
Yeah, and you know, I've had really interesting conversations with people who work in the social services sector, and they've just felt like, oh yeah, I'm not into animal welfare because animal welfare is just all about people, right? Like especially in the way that we've talked about our work, is this huge focus on like, there's you know, we're not as interested in people issues as the animal issues, and people are the bad guys. And then when I talk about what it means to actually support people and animals together and combined well-being, and what happens to animals affects people, what happens to people affects animals, they're like, oh yeah, like I totally, that resonates with me. The rhetoric that happens in animal welfare actually turns a lot of people off. And I think we can see a lot of opportunities to connect with people that we haven't connected with before. And social services are a huge part of that. We see that happening, whether it's people who may be unhoused and experiencing housing insecurity, and they are making a choice to not go into that shelter because they would rather be with their animal. People who need to get to safety from a domestic violence experience and reality, and they don't want to leave because they don't want to leave their animal behind. People who may be sacrificing feeding themselves because they're experiencing food insecurity, loss of a job, disaster, mental health crisis, and suddenly they're not able to access food the way they were before. And they're going to choose to feed their animal or feel like, I can't care for my animal the way they should be cared for. So now our family has to break apart. So that well-being is so deeply connected. And I think there's really important collaboration and connection opportunities that are out there for us.
So if there are folks that are interested in finding out more about Spark and what are the tangible things that your website, your organization can offer, how would they do that?
So on our website right now, we have a growing body of resources. So we have these three really core practices and principles that we talk about. And I should give you a quick summary of them, but I will say we also have some training that'll be coming in the new year, and there's going to be a variety more resources. But the best way to start would actually be explore the training. You can send a message on the website and reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to anyone about this or what it might look like in your work or community. But I did want to highlight these practices, include the kinds of things we've been talking about. One is systems framing. So how we can really move away from a very narrow focus on individual shaming and blaming of people or pet owners and really be talking about the larger systems that impact the choices that people have, the options that they may have to care for their animals. We see this show up a lot with individual pet owners, but I think it's something that people who are supporting community cats and managing colonies can really understand. I think caretakers are often blamed for what happens with cats in communities. A cat pees in someone's garden, and it's because that person is feeding the cats. A cat is showing up on someone's porch or their car every day, and it's like, because that person is feeding the cat. And so there's this opportunity. Let's actually talk about, right? Let's make sure our messages are about these bigger systems that are the reason why the cats are there. Because our community caretakers, our colony caretakers, are actually a huge key to making this better, a really valuable, important part of the system. So how can we have those bigger conversations? The other is messaging with dignity. And some of the things we were talking about, like stereotypes, villainizing, how to move away from othering to make sure that our language is actually helping us build trust and connections with people. And then I mentioned empathic listening. So we have these principles that we know. I can nerd out and get into all the nerdy psychology, social behavior science. It's not like I went into the back room and said, you know, it would be helpful for me. This is from like years of research. There's a lot in other sectors that also shows that these are really core principles around our beliefs and ideas. So we're just looking at how can we bring this into our sector to help us make our work even better, help us do our best work together.
Excellent. Any last thoughts before we close out today?
Can I share one story? Because to me, it encapsulates a lot of these things. I think about it a lot because it sort of happened organically. I have a friend who is a cat lover. She has some cats of her own, but she's not deeply in the animal welfare space. She hasn't worked as a paid person in the sector. She is a community member, but she's heard me talk so much, right, about Spark and our principles. And she told me this story a couple months ago. She lives in sort of a smaller rural town in Illinois. And she said that she heard her neighbor across the street who had a cat was having trouble taking care of the cat. And so She walked across the street one day when she saw the neighbor was out to talk and be like, hey, you know, I heard there's something going on with you and your cat. And the neighbor immediately kind of got defensive, but like really started explaining, like, I've had these health issues and mental health and I had to go on disability and my income. And, you know, so I haven't been able to afford cat food. And just like she could tell, she was almost like kind of trying on the defensive. And my friend said, I'm not here to judge you. I just want to learn about what's going on so we can do something and I can be helpful to you if you need it. And she said the woman just burst into tears and started crying. And from that, then my friend, she was able to hook her up with some local resources for a food bank and hook her up with some litter. And now this person can keep their cat and the cat's happily in their home. And so when I think about the impact of our work and what we're trying to achieve, it is all of these like moments and these conversations where someone approaches someone else and says, I know what you're going through is actually bigger right now than just one decision, like a decision you may be making. I also know that you as an individual have, I want to empower you. I don't want to take your power away. She took the time to listen. She didn't just villainize this person because they weren't taking care of their cat. To me, it just encompasses, what if we can have so many more interactions like this? A community member to a community member, or a person from one organization talking to another, or organization talking to a community member. And so when I think about the power of really shifting our narratives of news stories and messages, it is to create so many moments like this, because I think that can really change what's happening for our cats.
Excellent. Hannah, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on our show today. That was a great story to close out with, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
Thanks, Stacey. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me and for all that you do. Really, it's amazing. I've been watching what you've been doing with this podcast and your work supporting cats for many years.
Oh, thank you.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.